that a lot of people kind of pick up Virilio's books and then they don't, and then they don't kind of go back. Whereas I was kind of one of the few people who kind of read Speed and Politics and thought,
exactly,
wow, what was that? I'll read it again. But actually most people don't. So I think that a lot of the things that I've done are really kind of because I know the background and I've investigated it and etc. But I've done a lot of work for a lot of other people who don't now need to do that work.
Okay.
Do you see what I mean? So it's you know, they don't know what phenomenology is, they don't know, you know, where Virilio comes from in that, even in the phenomenological world.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing. So, and it took me a long time
to figure
that out. Yeah, ages.
Yeah, the whole background of Virilio, talking about phenomenology, Merleau-Ponty, and all those, you know, philosophical background, that's why it has been taking me so many years, the PhD.
Yeah, that's right.
Because it's on one hand side, the research part, I've gone to La Rochelle, to Paris several times, etc. Here in London at the AA, they have a nice library there.
That's right. Yeah,
it's okay.
Yeah.
And the video interview worked very well. But takes a lot of time, to be honest.
Yeah, that's right.
And now I'm just like describing very generally right now the PhD thing and the thesis work. Maybe later I show you the documentation, no?
Right,
the graphics.
Yeah.
But let's say, roughly talking, on the first chapter I describe the philosophical approach, his background, of course the 60s, basically.
There's a lot of it that you kind of had to be there.
You either
had to be there or smoking the same things that they were smoking.
Because
some of it is like, what?
It's amazing. A lot of very interesting stuff. So the first chapter, in a way, what I do, I review his background, philosophical background, etc., the architectural principe. These four guys, Parent, Lipsy, you know, the group as a whole, his production. I make a kind of a stop. I highlight San Bernadette and I, no?
Right.
Of course, in the verse, very important. Most of his urban projects, which were a little bit like odd, in my opinion, in relation with the architectural projects. There was a kind of shift in scale, shift in a lot of issues, no? And the second part, I really focus on Virilio, no? When they break in 68, in the time that Virilio starts with the teaching at the École Supérieure de l'Architecture, and begins to write as a maniac with a huge kind of speed and production. So I make this kind of atlas of the books that Virilio has published, but also magazines, etc., but also books that others have published about Virilio, you know, in order to have an idea. And I start like in a way narrowing the research, constructing keywords that are useful for my research. And at the end, I try to concentrate on two main words, no? Dromology and the ultra city, or cities of beyond, in a way, no?
Yeah, yeah.
Because as an architect, also with a kind of, I tend to feel very interested to urbanism, no? It's something that most of the schools of architecture worldwide are very keen, you know, to research the phenomena of the city, no?
Yeah, yeah.
Because of course it's changing so fast, so rapidly. And what I'm trying to develop as a kind of contribution is to build as much as I can, which has been very difficult, to be honest. And that's why your book, Virilio for Architects, opened me further, you know, very, very thin and very specific issues about, you know, unfolding issues that are in a way hidden.
Yeah.
Very difficult, you know, to pull off. So in a way,
I think also the other thing is that you kind of realize that especially with a book like that, because it's sort of, you know, like the series is like, you know, it can't be longer than 50,000 words.
Exactly.
You know, because that's the series. So, but actually, in lots of ways, it forces you to draw out specific things, which in fact is actually good.
Yes, it is.
So you, basically, people have said to me, you know, well, why do you do that? And it's like, look, you know, they said that about Brilliant on the media, that book. You know, and I said, look, you know, the only thing you can do with Virilio is choose what you're interested in.
Yeah.
You can't write about Virilio because I said, you know, you'd be writing about everything. You know, so I said, eventually what I decided to do was, I know people who do, say, international relations and Virilio, so they do dramology and war and, you know, and Kosovo and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm much more art-oriented anyway.
Okay, okay.
So it's like, if I get asked to write anything for international relations, I just say, forget it, I'm not interested. So I say to people, you know, if they ask me about it, I said, look, you know, I'm interested in media, and I'm interested in architecture, I'm interested in the arts, which is in fact what Virilio is interested in.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, really. You know, so I said, that's what I do. But the only thing you can do is say, look, I think this is interesting, that's interesting. Because, you know, you'd be there 25 years. You know,
or more.
Yeah, because, I mean, the problem with Virilio a lot of the time is that he invents a new concept every three pages.
Exactly.
But the problem with him, which is double-edged, the problem with him is that he invents a concept every three pages, and they're great, and then he doesn't develop them,
exactly.
which is bad. But in fact, for people like us, that leaves lots of space, because we can run with that idea, and if we want to, because he won't, you know, that sort of thing. So I think you know, it's productive in that way, but that's all you can do.
Yes,
that's
yes,
all.
Yes.
You know, there's no point trying to cover Virilio. You just can't. You need to focus it on media, architecture. Yeah, because he's kind of roving all over the place, you know.
I mean, for me, it's very interesting to be here with you, talking about these issues, because it's I'm in this last stage of the thesis work, and any ideas or any suggestions would give me a lot of light, no? Because I would say the documentary part, I would say, is more or less done. But the part that I'm struggling right now with is basically the developing further.
Did anyone thank you. Well done stick pins?
I asked for well done.
Yeah.
Thank you. Can I get any ketchup, mayonnaise, mustard?
Mustard, yeah, please. Mustard.
We have pepper,
yeah.
Mustard, and that's it, because I don't like ketchup.
Okay.
I'm English French or whole grain?
What would you prefer, what? English or French or... French?
French.
Yeah, French, it's okay. So, sorry, go on, and you were saying that you're struggling with...
Yeah, I mean...
with which part?
What is next, if I have to put it short, what is next after the concept of the ultra city and the cities of beyond, which in a way is kind of, you know, it's big on itself, right?
Right.
There's a lot of subtopics or subterms within. But what is next in terms of, course,
do you feel do you feel that you've got to go beyond those or not for the thesis, or?
Well, what I feel right now is that, for instance, Cities of Beyond and the Ultra City, there are like three, four sub-concepts, no? Very high buildings, the global hypermobility, hypercritical space. There are sub-categories of key concepts.
Yeah.
But of course, as an architect, let's say with a kind of interest in urbanism, and as a PhD, I have to develop or I have to research maybe the text as an object, no? Because mainly those key terms, please correct me if I am wrong, but as far as I understand, in the futurism of the instant and in the University of Disaster, I guess,
yeah,
those are the main Virilio books that in a way pave the concept of the ultra-city, somehow,
yeah, yeah.
No?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And there is this very nice interview with this magazine, this Holland magazine,
right. Yeah.
Which I found very interesting.
Yeah,
your interview with Virilio.
That's right, yeah, they asked me to go and do that.
Yeah. Very interesting one.
Yeah.
Because in a way you force Virilio to answer some questions that in a way are more related to the city without escaping, no?
Yeah. Well, I don't know what it was like when you interviewed him, but when people ask me about it, I said, well, the difficulty is not getting Virilio to talk. The difficulty is to get him to be quiet,
yeah,
to get a question in. You know, because you ask him one question and he's still talking 20 minutes later. Yeah, which is good in a way.
And jumping from one topic to another one.
That's
no?
right. Well, the thing is as well that, I mean...
Bon appétit.
Yeah, same to you, yeah. And he you know, he's very ill now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm.
He won't see anybody. And he had heart problems,
mm-hmm,
but also he was suffering from depression.
Mm-hmm.
That really serious depression.
No, you've had a taste of it. Is everything okay?
Yes,
with
very nice. Thank you. So he doesn't see anybody at all. He doesn't give interviews or anything. So I'm thinking that he's actually quite ill because he won't. I spoke to do you know Julie Rose, the person
who
translates?
Yes.
I spoke to Julie because she's in Australia, but she was in Paris and she was trying to see Virilio, and he wouldn't even see her. And if you you can't get to him at all now. So I don't think there's going to be any more books, and I don't think there's going to be any more interviews.
Hmm.
You know, so I think that's where it is for now. But the reason I was saying it was because I think, especially with the University of Disaster, you can kind of start feeling it because it's. I mean, I think it's, you know, it's one of the worst books. It's getting worse. The writing is getting worse and worse, I think. So, I think it was starting to happen when he was writing that book. Because he told me that he'd started a book on Fukushima,
mm-hmm,
but it's never come out and he's never finished it. But I know he said to me that he'd written two chapters, but this was 5 years ago, you know, just after it happened, he was writing a book on it, you know.
Virilio is five or... In other words, Parent was 5 years older than Virilio, or 10 years?
He's older, I think, yeah.
Because,
yeah, but,
you know, he passed away, right?
Parent. Has he?
Yeah.
What,
yeah.
Recently?
Yeah, very recently, 3 months ago.
Oh, I didn't hear
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, right. Because I met Parent once,
mm-hmm,
and he was such a lovely guy.
Yeah,
really.
Very nice.
Did you meet him or not?
No.
Oh, he was
yet.
A lovely guy. I thought he was still alive, but
no.
I didn't realize.
No.
Ah.
No. In fact, he passed away at the end of February.
That I didn't know. Because I'm not doing any Virilio stuff anymore. You know, I've kind of done enough. I just can't do anymore. The Architect's book was the last book. I just got nothing else left to say.
Yes, it's I think what, and that's why, you know, right now I'm talking like general ideas, no? Trying to describe what I've been doing, etc.
Yeah.
But it's gonna be clearer when I show you the stuff graphically, no?
I think it's also a question of trying to look to people who are kind of influenced by Virilio. and sort of working with them, like Schumi, or Jean Nouvel, people like, I think they're the people to talk to,
enormous influence.
But you don't know how much they've been influenced. I think Schumi was kind of closer to Berlioz then. I mean, when I did the Berlioz for Architects, but it's kind of like, the series is such that they want you to relate it to something, so it's kind of, I had to relate really to somebody, and it was either Jean Nouvel or Schumi. But actually, I think Schumi is closer in spirit, than
Nouvel. Because of the event and
that's
all that
right.
issue.
And May 68 and all
exactly.
that. Yeah.
Parente, of course, Jean Nouvel was closer to Parente. He worked for Parente.
Yeah, that's right. And, you never kind of... I never kind of quite... I mean, I know that they disagreed about May 68, but I was never quite sure on, was that really it? That's what they fell out about? Just that? Or was it something else, But I never really kind of found out any more than that. No, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, because in most of the interviews, books, etc., it's like a kind of a very drastic move, no?
Yeah.
Yes, Virilio was very...
I
know that Parente used to... Well, most of his life, he was very well connected to the Borgia, to the rich part of France, the Borgio,
yeah.
And Virilio, in my feeling, in my understanding, Virilio is more like his way of thinking is more like a socialist, Marxist,
I mean,
thinker, no?
Oh yeah, or kind of closer to anarchism, I think. I know he didn't. He doesn't kind of subscribe to, or didn't do, Marxism. Mainly because his father was a Marxist. But I always liked the anarchist kind of flavour to Berlioz, so I like that. But I think also it's like, Berlioz was always upfront about the fact that, he hasn't got any qualifications in architecture. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like agent provocateur in Parent's office or something.
Exactly.
Really.
Exactly.
You just think, well, if Parent sat there and he can really do these drawings and he can really have these buildings built, and you just think, do I need this, this guy? So it's kind of like you can't work out how it worked at all, really. But, I mean, I think, for the time... It's amazing, like kind of futuristic, to have somebody in an architect's office like that.
I would like to do this now.
In the 60s, who was just kind of throwing out ideas. And I think it worked both ways. I mean, it's like... it was only because, Berlioz is deeply religious, that... he'd got connections in the church that the church actually got built in Nevers. Parent couldn't have got that built. It was Berlioz's connections in the church, so I think it goes both ways. And that church, have you been?
Yes,
it's absolutely amazing.
Yes, it's amazing.
Yeah, the people in Nevers hate it. it's a sort of national monument.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is.
But it's just phenomenal to see the thing, to imagine it. And to imagine it being built in the 60s, to even think about it, it's like, I just can't, you just can't kind of even conceive of somebody. What? In 1966, they're building this thing. It's amazing.
It's also a kind of junction of the best of Parente in those days and the best of Virilio in those days.
Yeah,
no?
That's right.
The whole
that's
issue
right.
of bunker archaeology, the whole interest of Parente about his tilting of the previous houses. A lot of issues involved. So, of course, I touched this tangentially in the PhD because a lot of PhD thesis about Virilio and Parent have made a lot of emphasis on the church as an object, which of course is very important, is absolutely interesting, but it's not new. I mean, so many books have come out talking about the church. And my opinion is like Le Corbusier, no? If you write about Le Corbusier, it would be one in thousand of publications.
Yeah,
you know, you would add
another
book to a pile of,
Yeah, there's not much left to say about Chandigarh.
At least I didn't find that part interesting. But what I found interesting was this kind of these last words about the intra-city, blah blah blah. And what I'm trying to do is to make the connection, because it seems that there is some sort of connection, no, not literal, because most of what I have learned about Virilio, reading you and so many others, is that Virilio is changing subjects frequently, but has a kind of common thread, no? This kind, the idea of resistance, the idea of the body and space, you know, to resist all the consequences of technologies and communication, gadgets, devices, etc. And that's one of my questions that I have, because in the Ultra City, basically, he talks, and you talk as well, that, of course, in spite of all this movement, this global movement, migration, etc., mainly people in the ultra city is very sedentary, no?
Yeah, that's right.
They don't move at all. Very high buildings, they don't move at all, no? Because they are connected all the time, let's say.
Yeah, that's right.
And what would be the kind of resistance, you know, or the idea of resistance in Virilio's mind in order to resist this condition, no?
Yeah.
This is something that I would like to brought up in the PhD.
Right.
Making a kind of connection to what he did, you know, in the decades of the 60s and 70s. But, you know, I mean,
I think that also they're two sides of the same coin. You know, that's the thing, that one doesn't happen without the other. So it's sort of like very high buildings are, in fact, in part at least, resistance on the part of the wealthy to the fact that people are moving, because you can escape it, you know, into the air. You know, so, you know, there's only certain people can go into the air and be there. But like Virilio says, I always like that phrase, you know, it's a cul-de-sac in the air. I really like that. You know, there's nowhere to go. You know, you imagine there is, but there's nowhere to go. And I think that's interesting. And I think the stuff about the kind of migration, you know, in the city, and I think some of the things that, you know, that he said to me about, you know, that the way things like camps have changed. Like, you know, camps were somewhere that people went to, then they went home, but they're not going home anymore. The camps in Syria, the camps in Jordan, they're permanent. You know, in Kenya, these camps, they're not going anywhere. They're temporarily going, and then they're going to go back. This is it.
No, they live there.
Yeah, this is it, you know, and people have been, spent their entire lives there. So I think there's that, and then I think there's the sort of, and I think there's the sort of, you know, people on the move. You know, never been so many people on the move on the one hand. But I think some of it ties into other bits of sociology, which is like, you know, like Zygmunt Bauman and people like, you know, like tourists and vagabonds. There are good people moving and bad people moving. So it's okay if you've got your own private jet, but not if you're a Syrian refugee.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that sort of thing. So, but I also think that, I mean, some of the things that are happening, say in London, I'm doing quite a lot of work on luxury now, but some of the things that are happening in London are increasing very high buildings, which are empty, but in fact are luxury apartments. And you hear of kind of like Chinese billionaires buying eight that they'll never live in.
That's
and meanwhile, you know, there's kind of homeless people.
Mm-hmm.
So you're getting this kind of like contradiction, you know, all the time. But I mean, it's all dependent on particular countries. Like London and the UK is seen as very safe. That's the thing. So people invest their money here. Well, why is London safe? Well, because Syria is not safe, Greece is not safe, Spain's not safe. You know, because they're volatile situations. But how long, you know, the UK can remain to be seen as safe, you know, I think is...
maybe, you know, not with the Brexit.
No,
right?
Exactly, yeah. And I think when not for much longer. And, you know, when you think through sometimes the implications of what Verily was saying, they're kind of horrendous, you know, because it's like, there's only one way this is going, you know, and that is... You know, increasing numbers of people on the move. You know, and not choosing to move.
You know, they're forced to move.
Yeah, forced to move. That sort of thing. And it's kind of horrendous to kind of contemplate that. But like you say, and at the same time, you know, I do like that term that he has about mobile phones,
mm-hmm.
where he talks about technological obesity.
Uh-huh,
that
uh-huh.
we carry everything.
Uh-huh.
You know.
That we take the city with ourselves.
Yeah, that's uh-huh. right. Yeah, uh-huh. I like that. And I like that idea. You know, so you've got the entire city. And there's people like that artist Lucy Orker and people uh-huh. like that who did the kind of tents. And, you know, you can have, you know, almost like you have your clothes as a, uh-huh. Uh-huh. you know, that sort of thing. So I think there are kind of ways and means, but the problem, I think with Virilio, the problem is that sometimes you're so far in front with Virilio, he's thinking so far ahead,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you know, that it's like, you know, what he's talking about, you know, there are very few things that he's talked about that haven't actually come to pass, I think.
Yes.
You know, so it's kind of, in a way, it's like, he is, you know, futuristic, but he's not usually that wrong. You know,
most of the time, in my experience. Yes.
You know, so you just think, well, there's probably something in what he's saying, you know, and trying to make sense of the thing. You know, it's very difficult.
In your opinion, who would be the next Virilio? I mean, talking about the thinker, the philosopher, the kind of urbanist, because I was talking about this idea with a colleague of mine in Barcelona.
Yeah.
And he asked me the same question. And in fact, I couldn't answer. I said, well...
Stiegler.
Who?
Stiegler, probably.
Stiegler?
Yeah, you know Stiegler?
No.
Yeah, Bernard Stiegler?
No.
Oh, you should look at his work.
Yeah?
Yeah. He has taken a lot from Virilio, but he doesn't say so. But have a look at Bernard Stiegler. He's lots of books. In English, he's used, published by Polity.
Okay. Bernard?
Stiegler.
Okay.
Stiegler. And he talks about speed and the city and also about disaffected generations and movement,
mm-hmm.
etc. But he's got a kind of different take on technology, because I mean, few people now, I think Virilio is kind of increasingly seen as out of touch, and he hasn't published anything for a while, so, and of course the whole technological landscape has shifted, and it shifted to the extent that, I mean, you know, I work with Yussi Parikka, and he does like media archaeology and things like that, but I mean, they're into ideas that the whole phenomenological idea that there's kind of like the subject and the world and the subject and the city, it doesn't make any sense. They're all the same thing. So the idea of the environment for them is like, it doesn't make any sense that you are the environment. So they're kind of like, they're not spending their time criticizing Virilio as such, but they wouldn't think to use Virilio, because for them it's not that useful.
Of course.
You know, so it's kind of like, and I mean, you know, that's happening with phenomenology anyway. that, I mean, there's lots of people, you know, like me, who still like it, you know, and still happy in that world. But there's increasing numbers of people like the object-oriented ontology people, you know, the Graham Harman, you know, they're kind of like, you know, against notions of subject-object. So that breaks down everything they've really asked to say. You know?
Yes.
You know. And of course, the other thing is that you get a lot of people who don't like the who don't like the religious kind of aspects, which in fact, to me, you know, started to come through more and more the later their work.
Like, should I?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But you know, it starts to come through more and more. I think as he's got older. The religious aspect has come through more,
of course, yeah.
Which is kind of, you know,
normal
anyway. Yeah,
of course.
But a lot of people don't like that, you see. So I think it depends, you know. And you know, some people will say they prefer Baudrillard, or, you know, he's more radical and it's not tied to religion. You know, and Berlioz is one of the last people who believes in the real and things like that. You know, so. I mean, there are problems with it, but I mean, the thing is, there's problems with everybody. You know, it's a question of whether the problems are too difficult to surmount what you're trying to do. I mean, I've always felt that you use what you can.
Exactly.
If I'm writing something, if Virilio comes up, great. If he doesn't come up, it's not a problem, because I'm
sure.
You use what is appropriate. You know, so it depends, really, but I think like doing something like the Virilio Dictionary and things like that, you know, it was good to do that. I got asked to do that, but it was like, it's a good resource for people.
Yes, it is.
You know, to dip in and say, oh yes, you know, that's interesting, thinking about cinema like that, or thinking about disappearance or aesthetics like that.
In fact, there are several words in the Virilio Dictionary, and of course, Ultra City, someone from Australia, I think, developed the Ultra City.
Ah, right, okay,
no?
Yeah. Maybe, I can't remember.
A young guy, I think.
Yeah, maybe,
well, he's not that old.
Mm.
So I have, in a way, also understanding the difficulty of getting to some of these concepts. I'm thinking possibly on, as soon as the PhD is done, etc. I'm considering to open up the possibility of making a publication, no?
Right, of course, yeah.
Get closer to Gustavo Gili or one of these Actar or one of these editorials. Because what I think is has helped a lot is the Virilio Dictionary, your last book.
Right.
But in a way for architects that are younger than me in Virilio and Parent has passed away very recently.
Yeah.
Saha as well. But, you know, the architecture of the 60s, for me, in the 90s, was not that far.
Mm.
But from a lot of people, today, the architecture of Paul Virilio and Claude Parent, and especially the moment in the 70s and the 80s, and all this constellation of books of Virilio, etc., for me, I think it makes sense to have a kind of graphic description of the territory or territories of all these books and magazines coming up. And I mean that part of the PhD, but mainly my objective is to develop, you know, try to translate, to develop a little bit better the idea of, you know, for in terms of architecture, no? The idea of the Ultra City and cities of beyond.
Right,
And that's it.
Yeah.
Maybe to
that's
open
enough.
Up. That's enough.
That's enough, yeah.
That's enough, because it's...
The city's a big concept to begin with.
No, it's huge.
So to think about the Ultra City, yeah. I think also it's about, you know, some of the stuff around the Ultra City, if I remember, when I was thinking about it, was to do with almost like the disappearance of the city, but the disappearance of the city into technology.
Yes,
The urban becomes the technological, you know, in that sense. It's almost like you know, you kind of don't need the buildings. And, and I think also Bruno's very good in terms of, thank you, he's very good at picking up on other things like the trends in architecture about wanting to be able to see through buildings. You know, like not having any obstruction to vision. You know, so transparent buildings and that sort of trend, you know, of opening things up, massive windows. And, you know, we don't want any obstruction to our vision at all. And I think there's a lot in that, you know, and I think there's a lot in that. And I think there's a lot in that that's about sort of like totalitarian kind of vision. So I think there's plenty of things that you can work with in terms of the ultra city, you know. So, and I think it's like all you can do is kind of run with it, really. And so, you know, you kind of have to take risks yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like when I started to do the stuff about hypermodernism, you know, and it's kind of like people have then talked to me about that, and I said, well, you know, the hypermodernism came out of the fact that. At the time, which is a long time ago now, you know, when I did that first book on hypermodernism and beyond, but it came out of the fact that you read Frederick Jameson on space and the city and postmodernism, and he tells you that, you know, space is the thing and time was modernism and nobody's interested in time, and you read Brulia and you kind of go, I don't think so. Yeah, you know, and you just think, well, you know, I came to it, you know, in the sense of, actually, we're all talking about postmodernism in architecture. And the thing that interested me about Brulia, actually, was that I was reading all this and thinking, Brulia just doesn't fit with this at all. It does not. If you look at all the characteristics of postmodern architecture.
Yeah, it's out of the question.
Thank you. If you look at all the characteristics of postmodern architecture, thank you, what Brulia was talking about doesn't work. You can't fit it into that frame, which in fact made it more interesting for me, because rather than being able to say, oh, Paul Brulia is a postmodern architecture, well, he isn't, because he's not interested in, it's not, it's kind of time is really important, speed is important, and here's Frederick Jameson, who's getting lauded for all this stuff about space and the Bonaventura Hotel and all the rest of it, and you just think, well, Brulia's not talking about that. Well, actually, this is more interesting, because everybody was so in a way, it was kind of like I had to think in terms of, well, what Brulia was doing is not modernism, but it's not postmodernism, and it seems to be modernism on speed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I just went with hypermodernism. It's sort of like, you know, it's like modernism accelerated. You know, so it's because a lot of Brulia stuff is very much tied into modernism.
And that's why you coined the hypermodernism.
Yeah, because it wasn't so much that I came up with hypermodernism for the sake of it. I came up with that because it didn't work when you put Brulia against postmodernism. It just doesn't work.
Not at
Brulia
all.
Brulia never fits into that frame, which, as I said, that's what makes him interesting.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
because it's like everybody fit, you know, there's no sign. And he's really, it's like, what? You know, and that's what I like about him. He always chooses a different path.
Yeah, yeah.
And I always like that about him. So in that sense, you kind of have to go with, you know, there's a point at which, when you're writing, I think, there's a point at which, like, you know, with your first chapter on the PhD, where you're kind of saying, well, look, you know, Brulia says this, Brown says this, and, you know, etc. But actually, you know, for a PhD or for a book, there has to be a point where you kind of say, well, actually, I think it's about this.
My position is this.
And you find yourself, you know, it's these days, I'm not worried about it, but when I was doing my PhD, you know, it's kind of like, it's the first time you kind of find yourself out there on your own, and you find out that that's only me saying this. And it's kind of exciting but scary at the same time, because you kind of go, is that right? But there's actually no books to look at.
No,
there's nobody to say, well, Virilio says it's true, so it must be true. there's just you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the other side of that is that you're actually now discovering something that nobody's discovered before.
Yeah, that's an interesting part.
And
yeah.
that's the interesting bit.
Yeah.
You know, so you're kind of, I mean, I'm used to it now, but when I was doing my PhD, you know, it was very similar to kind of, to that sort of feeling. It's sort of double-edged, you know, that you, mm-hmm. That it's exciting because you're on your own, but at the same time you're kind of worried because you just think, well, everybody's not going to think I'm an idiot. Do you know what I mean? I got it all wrong, you know. But you know, I think now I don't worry about it. I just do. Yeah, in fact, now I notice it. The way I notice it, and always have done, is that when the references start fading away, and you know, when you initially start writing, there's lots of references. You know, I want to talk about Paul Verhoeven. Well, you know, there's all this. Yeah. But gradually, you kind of lose the references, and then it comes down to two or three, and then one, and then there's no one. You know, it's just you.
Yeah.
You know, and then you kind of know you're doing something.
Sure.
You know, so I think that's important. But and you kind of, you know, you kind of start to enjoy that or look for that, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
So with Verhoeven, the two basic things, like I said, are, well, you can't write about everything, you know, you've got to choose what to write about.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got to say to yourself, well, he mentions the altered city here, here and here, you know, and if you put those things together,
mm-hmm.
they seem to amount to this.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do that, well, fine, this is what you get. And then it's kind of a question of saying, well, if you took that further, what would it mean? So I just kind of do it that like that, which is like work out what mm-hmm. he's saying, you know. And then say, well, that runs into a wall if you take it this way, but if you take it that way, you know. So
mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah, so when I was doing that last chapter of Brilliant for Architects,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's sort of, well, you know, it's kind of like Shumi seemed the closest, but then there are other people around who are doing things about ramps and doing things about, mm. you know, tilted planes. And,
mm-hmm.
So they're still around today, you know, you can kind of work with that to some extent, I think. But it all depends, you know. But I think you've got to recognize that the climate's changed, architecture's changed, technology's changed. You know, I mean, Verhoeven doesn't know the first thing about actual technologies, you know, by these things. And, you know, he doesn't have an email. Or like,
yeah, no.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I get emails from people, you know, saying, can you let me have Paul Verhoeven's email? And it's like,
no, I have to contact him writing a regular letter.
Yeah, that's the only way you can do it.
Yeah. Regular letter in French.
Yeah, that's right. It's only in French.
Do you speak French?
Every time. Yeah, because he doesn't speak English.
Yeah, he doesn't.
Yeah.
A student of mine, very fluent in French, helped me. Mm-hmm. You know, for the interviewing.
I have had people with me for the French, because it's one thing to get by in French, but it's another thing to talk to Verhoeven in French.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. So it's kind of, you know, basic French, and it's okay, but once you want to start talking about dromology, you know, and the Ulster City in French, you know, that's when you're... You know, you find it difficult, but I think you've just got to go with your instincts. And I think the other thing as well with the PhD, you know, it's like what you've got to do is, well, show how you've contributed to Verhoeven's studies in some way, but also where that could go. And I think the other thing is to plot that in such a way that becomes your next project. So it's sort of like, if you're sensible about it, the thing to do is try to work out, well, what am I interested in? You know, if I finish this PhD, what would I do then? Well, I'm interested in X. Well, take the PhD in that direction, because you're kind of already starting on your next project. You know, so there's some sense in that, and I think it's a matter of having kind of continuity with your own work as well. So I think, you know, it's like figure out, you know, because there's always things when you're doing a PhD that you kind of go, God, that's really interesting, but my PhD is about this. And it's very easy to get sidetracked. You know, and you can't do that, you know. And I think, you know, like I was saying before, that there is a point, and you're probably there, where it's just a job, get the thing finished. I'm not thinking isn't really a wonderful anymore, or anything. It's just get this chapter finished. And there's nothing wrong with that. And I think that's the point. At one level, it's kind of easier because you know what it is. You know, it's like, and it's just a job. You know, it's a bit like, you know, when you've done the first, you know, like when I've done the first draft of Brilliant for Architects or whatever, it's like the exciting bit's over. The rest of it is just tidying up. You know? But actually, I find that not too bad to do, because actually, when I go over it second and third time, I'm no longer thinking, what do I think about the overall exposed city? I'm actually thinking, well, actually, it'd be interesting to do something on that, you know, because the thinking's kind of done. You know, and I think that's... But I would say, you know, think about where you want to go next and take the... Don't let Virilio determine where you go next. You determine where you go with Virilio next, and that's a key thing, you know. So it's sort of you need to kind of make sure that you're in charge, not Virilio, you know, or whoever it is you're working with. You know, you need to be in charge. You know, so it's sort of like with the interviews that I did with some of them with Paul. I'd write to him and say, look. You know, I can come and do an interview. Like the first big one I did was just a general thing, you know. And the second time, you know, I went with a friend of mine called Patrice Rimon. And I said, look, I'll just come and talk to you about the Kosovo War. And he said, fine, yeah, we'll just do that. You know, because it's like, I said, you know, otherwise we're just going to talk about everything.
Yeah, exactly.
And then that Dutch magazine, they kind of paid me to go and do that. You know, but I said again to Paul, look, let's just talk about the last book. We just talk about the Ultra City. We just talk about it. And he's fine with that. And he knows when you're coming. And I think that's the thing, is bounding it. And then saying, you know, and it's the same with, you know, when you finish the PhD, you couldn't even do everything to do with really on architecture.
No.
Do you know what I mean? You need to choose something.
Yeah.
And it's got to, you know, at the same time, it's got to sustain you, you know, as to be interested. And I think that's the way to go, is to find people who are interesting like that, you know, because, you know, it's, you know, he's, Virilio and my father are the same age, they're both 84, you know, so I know how old he is, because I know how old my father is, so, you know, you can't look there, you know, but I don't think that means Virilio hasn't got anything to say to us. But things change, you know, and it was relevant for some things. But there are all kinds of things that are still relevant.
A lot of
know,
them.
In Virilio. Just in speed and politics, never mind anything else. You know, so I think there is that. And, you know, so it's worth going with it, but it's where you go with it. I think that's the main thing. I mean,
that's a nice suggestion.
I'll tell you who's really good is Adam Shah. Adam Shah is great.
Yeah.
He's a lovely guy. I mean, that chapter that he did on Zumthor's...
The church.
Yeah. I mean, that's a nice piece, you know, but he picked another architect who's a phenomenologist, who's into ecology and the body and...
I like it very much.
Yeah, but it's not Virilio, but it's kind of taking Virilio somewhere else, saying, look, you can use Virilio to think about this.
Uh-huh.
You know, that sort of thing. And Adam's a lovely person. You know, be good, you know, have a chat with him. He's at Newcastle. And he's also the editor of an architecture journal as well. So Adam has his own architectural practice.
Okay.
And he's also a professor of architecture at Newcastle University. Yeah. Uh-huh. But he's a lovely person, really lovely person.
I will try to reach him.
Mm.
Yeah.
Do that, or I'll introduce you to him.
That would be lovely.
On email.
Yeah, because of course, with all the apparatus of the thesis and the research and everything, also you find, you look for opportunities, no? In order to involve,
but also
to be involved in teaching or in some projects.
Adam will know people in the architecture world in a way that I won't.
Okay.
I'm not in it, but he's in it all the time.
Okay.
You know, so...
And I guess...
If you're at the stage that I think you're at, you need to start thinking about where you're going to go next. Mm-hmm. And you need to go for yourself, not for the room.
Yeah. That's very nice. You put it very nicely. Sorry, just want to make sure that I know this guy. That's for you. Just to give you a fly through.
Is this the thesis?
Yeah. This is the thesis as it was last October.
Right.
With a lot of comments that I have been working right now, no? Mm-hmm. That I'm, you know. So this is the first part. I think it's a lot of text, of course.
Right.
I'm going to move to the graphic part of it, no?
Ah, right, okay.
And the first part is what I was telling you.
You got some nice images.
The whole background.
Yeah,
right?
Some nice images.
I'm going to go fast because otherwise you'll be bored. Mm. No? Very interesting case studies of the 60s.
Right.
You know, references, of course, the whole theoretical and city.
Right.
The whole idea of the cities, no?
Oh, yeah,
in the
60s,
metabolism.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
The situationalist.
Yeah.
We're having the YAC as the final lecture of this spring, Wolf Pricks, no?
All right, okay, yeah.
Who also is very related with
Virilio.
Yeah,
that's right, yeah.
Last year we had...
On Archigram and what have you, yeah.
Last year we had Diller,
right.
Elizabeth Diller,
mm-hmm.
who worked with Virilio for the this exhibition with Jean Paradon, you know, the French guy,
mm-hmm.
the Tierra Natale, the...
Yeah.
Right?
Mm.
So this is, let's say, the diagrammatic part of it,
right.
that in a way maps out what is happening. Sorry about the comments,
wow.
let me move here. That's better. So I make this effort of trying to condense and taking advantage of the speed aspect of it,
yes.
no, trying to condense in several diagrams. In this case, the historical frame between 1603 and 1609, no?
Right.
So in a way, I structure this with cultural, philosophical, urban, and architectural, no, influences. So people that in a way don't know that much about the matter.
Very nice, thank you.
Very nice, thank you.
Yeah. It looks great, actually.
Of course, Hilda Becker, that in a way also made this archaeological photographing. You know her, right?
No,
the whole idea, right? After I start with the group principe, the production, no?
Right, okay.
I try to come with the four of them, what they did in those years. With, of course, images and...
Some brilliant images.
I went to the La Biennale of Culhas, The Elements.
Right.
There was an interesting piece about Pla Parent.
Right.
There. And, of course, these manifiestos of cities, which I would say are the least developed from the group, no, in a way.
Ah, yeah, the magazines.
The magazines, the original ones, you know.
Yeah, that's right. They are a nightmare to work with, those.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was trying to make sense of it, you know.
Yeah, yeah, but it's interesting because it's the part that in a way...
kind of, you know, like 500 words.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, some of the things, like turbines. You know, it's like, what?
What is this?
You know, like, what is that's this? What I said when I was looking at it. I was thinking, you had to be there for this to make any sense. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Paris in 1966.
The craters, no? These buildings,
right,
that in a way today would be able to be in Dubai or in China, no? In a way.
Mm.
Their work,
right,
built, non-built, most of it not built, only the Thomas...
Ah, right, the Houston. One of them was going to be demolished, wasn't it? The Villa Cuba.
I heard so.
Yeah, I saw something about it. I didn't know if it was, because there was a petition.
But I think this one as well is also a national monument.
Ah, right, yeah.
Not
yeah.
only Nevers.
Ah, right.
The Group Principe. I mean, their work.
Right.
In 63 and 69, relating the manifestos
right, okay,
with the
yeah.
projects and with San Bernadette, right?
Okay. Yeah.
This is the first chapter, in a way, no?
Right, yeah.
I make a kind of a very fast analysis of, well, not fast, but tangential.
Very quickly, James, would you like a tea or a coffee?
Can we just have a break and maybe we'll have some coffee?
Sure.
Yeah,
okay,
sure.
Thank you.
This is all work, but in a way it makes evidence about the inclination of it, the circulation
right.
of it, no?
Right, yeah, yeah.
Some diagrams that in a way explain the building further.
Wow, that's a fantastic one.
And then I move to the influences
right.
both on more recent architecture,
right.
let's say.
Mm.
You have San Bernadette
yeah.
in a diagrammatic way, also social and cultural references, influences, etc.
Yeah.
Parallels. Of course, you can see all the notes, no?
Yeah, yeah.
that I'm doing.
You got some fantastic images.
The oblique,
yeah,
as a thesis, let's say.
Yeah.
but I'm using already images from, you know, Libinski or from Peter
Eisman,
from even Kulkas, talking
yeah.
about the oblique as a
right.
kind of interest,
yeah.
right? Even I make a kind of contrast with Tim Nugent, who was working as a kind of handicapped person, with low degrees of slope.
Ah, right, I didn't
no?
know that. Yeah,
because
yeah.
parents have this amazing diagram that it should be around. This one,
yeah.
no? Suggesting the capacity of adherence,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Which was the toughest
right,
intonation.
Yeah, yeah.
And this guy is the contrast, is
right.
the opposite, no?
Yeah,
he had to take in construction loss
right.
the maximum degree, no?
Mm.
For handicapped people.
Yeah, amazing.
Which is very nice.
That I didn't know, yeah.
This is part of what Kulkas did for the Venice Biennale, no?
Right.
So it's like a kind of flying through.
Right.
I jumped to more recent pieces of architecture.
Okay.
Now the Philharmonic building. And this is the second part.
Right.
I titled from topology to dromology.
Okay.
No? Just to give an idea for people, no? I concentrate on Virilio and start to talk about speed, you know, Virilio young, old, in
right.
a way,
yeah.
The military influences in order to understand his religious and philosophical background,
yeah.
no?
Yeah.
The aspect of phenomenology, no?
Mm.
Other people like Hilda Becker, no? That in those days were doing interesting stuff.
Mm.
The philosophical, let's say, constellation of Virilio, no? Mm. Military, religious, philosophical, another. From Albert Einstein, as you know,
yeah,
to whatever.
Einstein. Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
it's huge,
Einstein.
No?
Yeah.
Walter Benjamin, he talks so much about so many people. So I start talking about the publications of Virilio
right.
in order to have an idea of what he started to do from 68. 70s and 80s, no?
Yeah.
And then comes the cartography, no? Of his publications. Which in a way, you know,
amazing.
A lot of work, huh?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. It's a labor of love, this, yeah, definitely, yeah.
So the because also there is a problem here. Some of them have been translated directly to Spanish, not to English. Basically we have the French, English and Spanish publications.
Yeah.
And I started to organize them.
Also some have been translated from French into German, but not into English.
Exactly. Yeah, it's true. Yeah. It's true. So I continue with this thing. Chronological thing.
Okay, yeah.
But when the publication repeats itself, it repeats in Spanish, in French, or whatever, no? But I start to put, you know, a kind of the index of those books that are important in dromology, for instance, Speed and Politics, no? So there is a tag, adjacent to the book in order to give the reader an idea of, you know, where the word comes from, where is the origin of the publication, with the index, because there are so many books and a lot of chapters are repeated in different ones.
Right.
It's a big puzzle, no? It's huge. No. Well, you are the one that knows the most about this, no? So of course it's...
And I'm sure that I've missed some. I'm positive about that. That's why there's no... The other thing is not to set yourself up, you know, as somebody who knows everything about Brilliant. Because there's there's always some things that just appear out of nowhere.
And I have... there are books that I have not been able to find, no? Yet. Not because they are not in the AA bookshop. You can buy them, no?
Right.
But in Barcelona it's a little bit more difficult. I continue with the chronology. I'm going to be faster, no?
Yeah, yeah.
Because there are so many.
Yeah.
And then I move to publications about Virilio.
All right.
Not his.
You're right, yeah, okay.
People that have been interviewing him, like you.
Yeah.
Mainly like you, like others. And also with those words, dromology, ultra city, etc. No? My interview somewhere is here.
All right.
Also in a chronological way with the index, etc. No?
Yeah.
And then I make a selection of the key writings about Virilio that are important in relation with my interest, no?
Right.
Mainly about the ultra city and mainly about dromology, no? And I make the selection of those key readings and in which books they are, no? Because it's a puzzle as well.
Yeah.
No?
Well, I think if when let's go back and have a look at your key readings. Which are the ones that you think are the best pieces of Virilio's?
Well, now, for my interests, I haven't read yet The Futurism of the Instant.
All right. Okay.
I am buying the book on Saturday.
Okay. All right.
No?
Okay.
But I know, because of all the references you do about the book and others, that it's an essential one. No? Talking about the proceeding. The one that I have been reading lately, is The University of Disaster, but I find it difficult because, as you were saying, I didn't know about this.
I think it's terrible.
It's terrible.
Terrible.
I get bored all the time.
I think he was well when he wrote that. I don't think it's very good. I think in terms of architecture, it's got to be the Lost Dimension.
Lost Dimension. Critical space.
I think the overexposed city.
The overexposed city. Which is in.
When people have said to me which book do I think is Virilio's best book, I think it's
Lost Dimension.
I think it's War and Cinema.
War and Cinema?
I think that's his best book.
As a book.
But not about architecture.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think...
Lost Dimension as architecture, I think it's the one.
Tremendous.
Yeah.
Absolutely
tremendous. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
I agree as well.
I love The Overexposed City.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And I love... I mean, just to be talking about things like, the loss of the facade and the interface and... what that means when one surface is up against it. To be talking about that at the time that he was talking about
it's amazing.
I mean, you know, it's kind of like about 1980 or something.
Nobody's
even invented the internet by then, but he's already onto it.
It's
absolutely amazing.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
And a lot of your books are here because I find them very interesting. That's why I contacted you.
Right.
In Grey Room, there's also
a nice interview there.
City of Panic is interesting for the city, but not that much, I would say.
You have to search to get get anything out of it, I think.
And then the experts of video.
Is this you, right? Yeah, yeah, yeah. An old photo, yeah.
That's why I couldn't find you, because I thought you were going to look like this, no?
Yeah, I know James Dedarian.
James Dedarian, who's this guy that you were referring to, the one that is running an architectural office?
Adam Shah.
Adam Shah.
Oh no, Ian James, yeah.
Adam Shah.
Adam is... he's in Virilio now.
In Virilio now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It should be here.
Doug Kellner, yeah.
This guy, Hugh Davis. You know him?
Ah, that's right. I don't know him because he contacted me because I sent out a sort of call for people to do things, and then they sent it on to other people. So I don't know this Hugh Davis.
Mm-hmm.
John Beck I know very well. He's a good friend of mine.
University of Westminster.
Yeah, John's great. He's really good. In fact, he's more into this stuff now than I am.
Yeah, John Beck?
So if you look at... you know that I edit a journal called Cultural Politics? John Beck's got a piece in there called Inside the Bunker.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and it's really, really good. You should look at that one. Yeah, John Beck is fantastic on architecture. He's very, very good.
Frederic Migueiro is the chairman of the Barletts right now, no?
Right, yeah, I know of him, yeah. Jacques Roucon is the one who wrote in the Function of the Oblique book.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Who else is that?
It's not here. Ian James.
Ian James is... I like Ian James.
Mm-hmm.
He is very good at what he does. Steve Redhead, not so much.
No.
Yeah. He seems to have a bizarre position in relation to Virilio, which doesn't make any sense. He keeps saying things like...
in Australia right now, no?
Yeah, but he kind of he says some odd things about Virilio that don't make any sense to me, anyway. You know, I've seen him kind of say, "Well, you know, Virilio's not an anarchist," and you just think, "Well, if you ask Virilio what he is." He says, "I'm a Christian anarchist, that's what I am."
Literally.
Well, yeah, and it's kind of like, well, I don't know how Steve Redhead can say he isn't when if Virilio sat here, he'll tell you, you know. So he says some very odd things.
I found his compilation, which has... He wrote this compilation years ago.
Yeah.
Quite interesting, for getting to know Virilio as the first time.
Yeah.
So in this part, I start with the roots and the quadrants, you know, combining keywords.
Right.
No?
Okay.
For instance, I have to work a little bit with security and police and security. It's in Spanish because, of course, what I want is to make an introduction of Virilio to the Spanish world, no?
Yeah.
Although there are parts that are also in English. Critical space, etc., no? But the interesting part, let's say...
Well, I think this this would be very useful if it was produced as a book, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's my idea.
Yeah,
so you have here the architecture and resistance, space and technology, speed and city.
Right.
These are the quadrants, let's say.
Yeah.
I'm trying to construct a kind of topography, of these works. And here, adjacent to the covers, the keywords start to appear, in different ways. So in a way, I find this useful for persons that in our, or people who in a way want to know more about Virilio, in order to navigate better, no? Because it's a kind of a...
That's what puts people off a lot. They don't know how or where to start.
Yeah, exactly.
And his writing is not very easy to
deal
with.
No, it's very difficult.
Yeah,
very
difficult.
Right. Yeah. Lately, I have added these keywords, you know, exurbanism, the cities of beyond, trajectography, which is a nice concept, etc. No?
Yeah.
The quadrants.
Right.
So I start to narrow these issues.
Right.
And I start to concentrate on the last words, which are dramology, which I'm not sure that I'm going to develop further.
Right.
I'm not that much interested because, of course, a lot of have been said and written about dramology. It's not new.
Right.
No? These are the terms, no? Ultra city and dramology, let's say. And this is... I make a kind of construction that I'm going to start, developing. Not that much in dramology, but in the ultra city, no?
Right.
And I start to introduce the work of Diller and Scofidio with Jean Paradon.
That was part of the exhibition,
exactly. Also the refugees camps that you're referring to, which are very interesting.
Yeah.
What LSC Cities is doing also.
All right.
The London School of Economics Cities.
Yeah. Are they doing something?
With Richard Burdett.
Oh, right, yeah.
Which is interesting.
Yeah.
An interesting case in Mexico City about technology being helpful in order to make mobility better. No, it was a competition that was won recently. So I'm gonna. This is the part in which now I'm concentrated. Maybe these words change because right now I don't find topology that much related with the ultra city, maybe.
But also you can use critical space as well.
I liked what Virilio
said about space being in a critical condition.
Yeah, that's very nice.
And I think also the idea of, making the kind of key distinctions between place and space, and space itself being kind of, in a critical condition, in the sense that it's kind of like becoming something else, but we're not quite sure what it's becoming. And the disappearance of space into technology. So you're kind of talking about technological space rather than physical space.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's quite interesting. I think that the idea that it's almost like a kind of matrix or something, that the kind of city could disappear, but
it could
still be here, connected.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. So I think...
I just wanted to show you some of the work.
Really, really good.
And the conclusions, no? In a way, which have to be, in a way, developed further, etc., no?
God, but you've done some work there. Really, yeah.
The UPC is quite conservative, so... I did a kind of...
So doing Virilio to begin with is quite radical.
Recently, not that much radical, but in 2004, 2003, that I got the research sufficiency, it was very radical. And they didn't understand why Virilio... A lot of issues, no?
Right.
That's why I have to move to the church, no? To bypass... part of the PhD, because they wanted to see an object. Something built.
Yeah.
Not something in a way that they could in a way touch, smell, or whatever. So that's why the thesis touches tangentially San Bernardino. Not only because of that, because of the importance.
Mm.
But I think I was a little bit bold because I tried to mimic. The kind of idea of interviewing people, no, that Virilio liked a lot. Most of the interviews, in a way, rather than Virilio choosing, a more academic work, he tend in the last decades to choose interviews formats.
Yeah, that's right.
Because it's faster.
It
allows more
change
etc. No.
Yeah.
So he said, well, what if I write, like a kind of linking, according with my index, linking different ideas of different people, no, but driving those ideas in my
right,
case,
yeah,
no.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But of course, the university in a way resisted to the idea because they think that the PhD has to be more like my thesis has to describe better the complexity of it. But I still feel a little bit reluctant because I found interesting, of course I have to come in a midpoint. I really like what I did in terms of, you know, quotating you, quotating some other people in order to construct an argument.
Mm.
Like a kind of mega interview.
Right, yeah,
no?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because it's what
yeah.
Virilio is doing in
yeah,
all
yeah,
his work,
yeah. Yeah,
no, in a way.
Right. Yeah.
It's like kind of fragmentary
puzzle
or whatever.
Yeah.
But I agree that right now it's difficult to follow. I'm gonna, you know, make it work and that's it, no? So,
I think
I'm there.
I think also, as I said, that I think in the end, you just got to see it as something.
Yeah.
Look,
yeah.
You know, to get a job in academia, you're going to need a doctor.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
There's a point at which you just do it.
Yeah.
You know, finish the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
And let's see what happens next. You know, any other publication, whatever. As you were saying, I have to think in a continuation of another project.
Yeah.
But
I think that's, you know, that's the thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah,
because I imagine if you, I mean, you've been at this several years, haven't you, so part time. So I think, I imagine, you know, if you get a doctorate, it'd be easier to get a job. You know,
is what I'm,
you know,
is what I'm behind,
exactly. So if you, because that's the thing these days. I mean, it's like that in the UK. You can't get a job in academia without a doctorate anymore. You know, you have to have a PhD, you know, for any job. And the reason is that there are a lot more people with PhDs. So why would you take somebody without a PhD when there's somebody sat here who has one?
Exactly.
Because it makes your institution look better.
Exactly.
You know,
absolutely.
Because they like to have doctor so and so on the door.
A lot of in some universities also, if your practice is good enough, no, they look at you maybe, but not
that's
as much.
Right. Yeah, that's right. In architecture, you could probably if you're, you know, Schumer, you can get away with.
No, yeah.
But you know, I think you're right. You know, you can have a practice.
Yeah.
And not have a doctor because your buildings are your doctor.
Yeah, exactly. I applied for the Kingston University.
Ah, right.
Because they were, in a way, asking for a kind of, I would say, visitor, no?
Right.
A visiting professor to lecture with a, you know, established practice, also with teaching experience and, you know, with research and stuff, no? But my idea is to finish this as soon as possible this year, no? And next year, I'm gonna start applying to whatever opportunities may emerge, of course.
Yeah.
Because you see, this I would really appreciate if you send me the contact from
Adam.
Adam.
Yeah, yeah. I'll introduce you on email.
No?
I'll do it on email.
No.
Yeah.
You were saying that he's on.
He's in Newcastle.
Newcastle.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That would be lovely.
Yeah.
Because of course I think he
is the series editor of Thinkers for Architects.
Okay.
So he's
perfect.
It's his series, the Virilio for Architects. Is
okay.
Because there's Deleuze for Architects.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
You know, Lacan and Derrida and Lefebvre and you know. Yeah, and
that would be lovely.
Yeah, he's a very nice person. Yeah, very nice.
And the natural move would be, if I have the PhD, and if I have the PhD on Virilio, start, you know, knocking at some doors in order to get some sort of collaboration or whatever work may come up. No?
Yeah.
This is more or less.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah.
A little bit like.
The other thing is to make sure that you try and move it on. mm-hmm. or yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so like, where is this going to go? Because there's not going to be any more.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's kind of like, well, you've got to move it on.
Yeah.
But actually, also, what you kind of, you know, you sort of have to do, I mean, a bit like me with some parts of really, I kind of develop it and take it somewhere else. And, but you kind of have to do that, because otherwise you just find yourself following the route.
Yeah, I don't want that.
You know, it's okay up to a point, but there's a...
It's you have okay to jump.
Yeah, and you kind of have to become yourself.
You could email me as well the reference of the new video that you were suggesting. What was the name?
I'm terrible with names.
Ah, Bernard Stiegler.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Could you write it down when you email me?
Yeah, I can do. Yeah.
I would appreciate it.
Oh, look on... is there Wi-Fi in here?
I don't know. Let me see.
Try.
Brasserie Blanc, maybe?
Yeah, that's it. Brasserie Blanc. That's where we are. I'm hoping we can...
Excuse me. Do you have Wi-Fi here, right?
We do, yes. It's our phone number. It's 01962.
01962.
810.
870. 870. Okay?
Okay, and it should work.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Okay. So go to Polity. P-O-L-I-T-Y. Yeah. So go there.
Let's see. No. Now it's working.
All right. Okay.
Let's see. Maybe it's very slow.
I don't know.
It's coming. Yeah, it's slow. Yeah. This is my webpage. You have the link. Polity. Trains to London are running frequently, right?
Oh, yeah. Every hour.
Look, it's here, but it's very slow.
Nice.
Amazingly slow.
It is, isn't it?
Here we are.
Are we getting there? Wow.
It's opening.
Try again. Here we go.
Mm-hmm.
Right, okay. I think it'll be under philosophy. Have you?
Double click.
Yeah. I think it should be there. I see it's coming.
Yeah, it's very slow.
Yes. But there's usually quality, there are main ones who translate Stiegler.
Hmm.
Right? Try and go to the catalog. Oh.
No worry. Let me see. It's here. And where do you want to go?
Just further down. Keep going, keep going. I'll just look for... No. Okay. heat. Go back to the top then. Right, okay. Put Stiegler in there and then we'll search it. S-T.
S-T.
And I think it's E-I. I'm not... try I-E. No, I-E.
Sorry.
G-L-E-R. Right, try to search now. I think it's coming. Very slow, isn't it?
Yeah?
Very slow. There you go. Automatic Society, look.
The Future of Work, Volume 1.
My symbolic misery, look.
All states of shock,
stupidity, mm-hmm. knowledge. But Lost Spirit of Capitalism, there's a lot. Yeah, this is very Virilio-esque. Uncontrollable societies. Yeah.
This one?
Yeah. This is very Virilio-esque. Yeah. So that's who you want to kind of look. So there's lots of it. Absolutely lots of it.
So yeah. This is more related to...
this is very, very, very Virilio-esque. Yeah, mm-hmm. definitely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I would certainly look... So just remember this name.
Bernard Stiegler.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's going to be there.
Yeah.
In the history.
He's somebody to use, I think.
Okay, okay.
What was I thinking then? Did you see... did you see the special section, you know that journal I edit, Cultural Politics?
Yes.
See if we can get that.
Mm-hmm.
Type in cultural politics. Cultural politics. Politics. Politics.
Sorry.
P-O-L. Politics.
Yep.
Right. Okay. Try that. Okay. There. It's loaded up. Let's go to the mm-hmm. We should be able to get the back issues, but there's a special section on Berlin that we did about a year and a half ago.
Very recent.
Yeah, very recent.
Oh, very good.
There's a paper in that section which uses Stiegler. Right, go to browse the archive. There's a paper in that section that talks about Virilio. I think it is... Let me see. I think it might be that one.
Should I click it?
Yeah. So we need to get the table of contents up. Because
mm-hmm.
I've just done this one, you see, on luxury. Because that's what I'm working on now.
Mm.
They asked me if I, because there's people who do luxury at the art school,
mm-hmm.
so they asked me to develop that area. So I'm kind of working on all the stuff I'm doing is all about luxury. Right, if you go a bit further down, right, can you see a special section on Square Horizon?
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So there's the introduction there, but this one, The Negative Abyss, Surface Depth and Violence in Virilio and Stiegler.
Ah.
Mark. He's one of the editors of Cultural Politics, and I work with Mark a lot. And he's really great on Virilio. But that piece of Mark's is about the iPad as a kind of not as a window on the world, but actually as a kind of mirror.
The iPad.
So that's what he talks about as the negative abyss. So it's actually about technology. And Virilio and Stiegler, so he's somebody who is kind of using Virilio, but through Stiegler to develop it. Mm. So I would suggest looking at that. So if you go a bit further down, and then there's one on Virilio and Robocop.
Oh.
And then there's another one about Dromospheric kids about video games and what have you. And then there's another one further down. That one is, that is really good paper. That is about Bruno's religious aspects. And then this one is about futurism of the instant.
This one?
Yeah. And Ender McCaffrey is in the French department at Nottingham Trent University. And he had a day school about, not last year, the year before, and he invited me. So all the papers that were at that day school, we put into cultural politics. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole lot of Aurelio stuff there for that you might not know about.
He's asking me something for the PDF.
Well, you won't be able to. You'll only be able to get it if your institution subscribes. I can send you them.
Ah, okay, that will be.
I'll send you a couple.
Excellent.
I'll send you a couple because I can just get them all. That's worth looking at, I think. So there's some things there. That's a nice piece about the influence of religion on Rob Aurelio. That one is more, the one there about pixelated flesh, it's about pixels, but it's kind of more Foucault than Aurelio. So it's kind of okay, but Mark's paper I think you'd like. Yeah, it's a nice paper. He's a really good guy.
Well, thank you. Thank you for all the suggestions.
Yeah.
Definitely, I find them very, very useful.
Right.
And of course, coming to Winchester is nice because most of the time I'm only in London and that's it, no? No? When I come to the UK, once or twice a year.
So are you just coming now to go to the Architectural Association or something like that?
No, the thing is, the program that I run in the IAC, in the Institute of Advanced Architecture.
All the
Catalonia.
Students here.
Exactly. So I bring the students to the UK.
Where are they now? They're in a hotel.
Well, somewhere. They are doing work.
Right.
They're
all architecture students.
Yes, from Mexico.
Oh, right.
So
I see.
What I do.
So do you take him around a book about a London architecture?
Exactly. What I've been doing in the last 4 years,
right.
You know, because of being based in Mexico. And in order not to lose the connection with Barcelona and the UK,
right.
I design, let's say, programs, undergraduate and graduate, and I direct these programs. Basically, it's a studio, a couple of seminars, and study travel. No, so on summer, these guys come to Barcelona to the IAC. From 5 different Mexican schools and also universities, and we are in London because of the study travel that I organize. So we go to visit Saha, Arab architects.
All right. Okay.
Tomorrow. Sometimes, well, most of the time, the AA. You know,
right.
Tomorrow I'm gonna be there like a guest reviewer. No. And of course the buildings that in a way are in, or the areas of the city that for us are interesting because of the project that we are doing in Barcelona, which is very similar to what they are doing at the Battersea Power Station.
Ah, right, okay.
A recycling of an old industrial structure
in order
to bring it in the...
Right, so it's a tame modern.
Exactly.
Yeah, right, okay. So in Barcelona, don't go to the Shard or anywhere or anything like that.
Well, they go because they want to, you know, most of these guys have never been in London, some have, but for them it's always interesting to see a city like London, not because of the size, but because of how the city so far has managed to do good stuff, no?
Right, yeah.
Because Mexico City is very interesting in terms of cities of Bijan,
you know,
26 million inhabitants, massive.
Gigantic,
So this all the ideas of Virilio are there, no? Completely.
Yeah.
But it's always interesting to make this kind of triangle, no? I don't like them just to stay in Barcelona because of the size, because of the scale. Barcelona is very interesting. Has a lot to say about public space, and mainly right now because of digital technologies, no? It's becoming the South Capital Europe of talking about, you know, digital tectonics, and digital constructions, all this kind of stuff, no? Yeah. Which is very, the architecture part of it very related with media, with technology, no?
Yeah.
And, yeah.
How long are you here for then?
3 days.
3 days?
Yeah, 3 days.
Wow, so you're going back on, what, Monday, is it? You're going back?
No, I'm flying because of my family. My family is in Barcelona. Right. So I'm flying back on Saturday, the day after tomorrow, late evening.
Are you? Wow, fast
and,
then.
Yeah, very fast. And my students are flying on Sunday because, of course, they want to take advantage of
the... Right, okay.
Huh?
Yeah, very quick then.
Yeah, very, very quick. Very
so you
quick.
Did well fitting this in.
Yeah, sorry that it was a little bit late.
So is your wife in London then?
No, my wife is in Barcelona
with
my children. Exactly.
Yeah.
Because if we would be like just my wife and myself, we would come, together, of course.
Right.
But three children, sometimes it's...
How old are they then?
13, the oldest. 8.
Yeah.
And 4.
Right.
So
right.
So
must be busy in your house then.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is. I have to say. And now the.
Do you like being a father, though?
Yeah, it's been a terrific, a very nice experience.
Right.
Of course, when we knew that Mateo is the name of our youngest, we knew in Mexico that he is autist, no?
Ah, okay. Yeah.
So that was a kind of a change in our family life.
Right.
But it has worked very well because Carlo and Miquel, the older brothers, we all treat Mateo as a normal person. He's not that bad in his autism, no?
Yeah.
But you can tell because his, his speech, his speaking is not well.
Right.
It's a little bit behind.
Yeah.
And some of the issues of motricity also are affected in a way.
Yeah.
He flaps a little bit when he gets excited.
Right,
no? You know, these kind of typical aspects.
Yeah.
But Barcelona offers more, let's say, facilities and more advantages. Living like a family, and numerous family, is better than in Mexico, no? Because of the advantages.
Are you from Mexico City itself?
Yes.
Yeah.
In my case, Mexico City originally.
Right.
My wife is from Guadalajara.
All right.
You may have heard about Guadalajara.
Yeah.
And we met in San Diego, in the States.
All right, okay.
She used to live in Tijuana, which is this border city.
Yeah.
And we got married very young.
Right.
I have 20 years married. So we got married 25 years. No?
Oh, yeah.
But you know, now we are back in Barcelona for good. And, these months have been kind of hectic because of all these aspects that have to be sorted out. I'm especially looking for, for a kind of position for the next year, mainly in Barcelona or in England, in the UK.
Yeah.
Hopefully the Brexit will not occur, otherwise...
Well, I hope not.
I hope not.
Yeah.
How do you see that? I mean, is it likely to happen?
It's not
statistically.
I think it's more hope that I think people will come to their senses when they come to vote and stay. I think, but there's a big. It's become a class thing.
Yes.
It's almost like. Kind of middle classes and above want to stay in, but lower classes don't want to. It's become almost divided along class lines. Because I think in part I understand it, because the kind of lower classes, working classes, they're at the sharp end of what's happening. So they go to the doctors or the health service, etc., etc. So they're kind of I think you have to be you have to be sensitive to it. It's like for somebody like me, if I meet people from abroad like you, you know, most of them have got PhDs or they're professors, or it's not a problem, you know. So everybody I meet from abroad are really nice and all about, you know, it's like, that's not normal, it's not what, you know, a lot of people are doing. So I know there are people where my parents live, you know, they just want to leave because they want this to stop. But the trouble is, it's a complete illusion that it will stop. It just won't. It'll take 6 years to leave. If we have a vote next week, it isn't just going to happen overnight.
No, it's going to take,
it's going to take 3 years to leave. And another 3 years to renegotiate everything, and nobody will want to renegotiate it with us. So it's a complete mess if we go that way. But
well, and what is happening on the other side of the Atlantic with Trump is ridiculous,
yeah,
no?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So the worst scenario would be the Brexit, and the Trumpism, no?
Yeah, exactly.
It's happening there.
So, I wouldn't rule it out. I wouldn't rule it out. I am definitely going to vote. I'm definitely going to vote to stay in. But
who knows?
Who knows, exactly, It's very irresponsible on the part of the government, because nobody asked for it. It's just to sort out an argument within one party. That's what it's asked. That's why we're all doing it. Yeah. That's why we're all doing it. Nobody wanted it.
And the new major, because of his origins, is more related to lower classes, I guess.
Yeah, that's right.
So in a way, he's like following the Brexit.
Yeah, that's right.
Pushing for the Brexit, right?
Yeah. So he's kind of playing on kind of racism, or kind of closet racism, you know, homophobia and what have you. But I think something, I mean, you might not have heard on the news, but an MP has been shot and killed.
I read it.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely amazing. And the person who's done it was saying, you know, about Brexit.
I mean,
that just doesn't happen in the UK. You don't shoot MPs in the UK. It just doesn't happen.
That doesn't happen.
So I think that might change everything. It really, because it shocked me, you know, when I came out tonight. Yeah, it's like, you know, I mean, it's one thing to disagree with each other, but to
another
shooting.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I mean, crazy. UK is not the States, right?
No, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
All these kind of stupid things happen.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I mean, I don't even know where he's got a gun from.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So I think that may change the dynamic altogether. But we'll see. But that's crazy. You know, people getting
killed.
It's crazy.
It's true.
So do you,
John,
do you think you need to make a move, or?
I don't know, I think it's time,
It'll take you an hour to get back, so I'll be 9.
Yes, but the train at what time, every hour?
Oh, they're going all the time, we could just go back up there.
Excellent.
And we'll see what the next one is.
Excellent.
They're about 3 times an hour,
okay.
Something like that. So there's plenty of trains.